Welcome, welcome, welcome back to CinemaScope. I am your host, Scarlett Sapir, right here on 93.3 CFMU-FM. Now, the last movie I watched is called Memoir of a Snail. This film premiered at TIFF. It is in theaters this weekend. It is from Adam Elliott, who is this, like, legendary Australian Oscar-winning stop-motion filmmaker who made Miriam Max, Harvey Crumpet, all this awesome stop-motion work, and now this. Memoir of a Snail is about this girl who just keeps taking hit after hit in her life, relentlessly. All this awful, terrible stuff keeps happening to her, and it is about her learning to love herself, learning to love others, and learning to have some say and power in her life. Really, the world has been really hard lately. My world has been really hard lately, if not other people's, and this was the kind of silver lining movie I needed. I actually got to chat with the director about this piece, which is really cool for me, and I will play you some of our conversation today. I mean, the secret word of our show right now is stop motion, the art that it is, the struggle that it is, and all of the awesome pieces and less awesome pieces that we have of the art form. So let's kick it off with the chat that I got to have with Adam Elliott. Again, he is an Oscar winner. I got to talk to an Oscar winner. That is so cool. Anyway.
So obviously, Memoir of a Snail is a film about, you know, reflecting on life with kind of the context of having lived it, relating it back to other events. It can only be understood backwards. What do you want a younger viewer to take away from this who doesn't really have that kind of context yet? They're still right in the thick of it.
Sure. Well, look, I think what's been really wonderful is that young people have been coming to see the film in droves, which was a real surprise because my audiences in the past have tended to be for more older people. But I think that's because all of us have gone through COVID, and particularly young people, it was a very isolating and for many a very lonely and difficult time. And so Grace is a character they really identify with because Grace has a lot of loneliness, has a lot of trauma and has suffered a lot. So they can relate to Grace, but also learn from her experience. And there's a lot of comedy in the film too. I've tried to make it as funny as possible. So I certainly don't want to depress audiences. I want them to come out of the cinema feeling uplifted. And even though they might be an emotional wreck, that they do feel hopeful about life, feel nourished, feel entertained, and that they've had a good laugh.
Yeah, I think you definitely accomplished that. So I did notice watching it, in a ton of the scenes, characters are reading like these really classic old books. And I was just wondering how literature related to your development of the film.
Well, reading's one of my first loves, followed by drawing and then followed by making films. And I wanted to make it really clear to the audience that Percy, Gilbert and Grace's father, instills in them the importance of reading and that how reading can be a wonderful escape, especially when you're feeling down or you want to just get away from your problems. And so it was important then also to put in all my favourite novels because they've brought me respite and solace when I felt down. So novels such as The Grapes of Wrath and Memoir of a Geisha and even The Diary of Anne Frank, these are all novels which I've enjoyed reading, but also I think bring solace and comfort to the lead characters. I'm also fascinated by why are classics classics? What is it about a classic novel that makes it timeless? And so I'm always sort of trying to work that out. And that's why I'm always rereading the classics too, and trying to work out how the writer did what they did.
I was wondering, just as like a fielder, how do you think the medium of stop motion animation adds to this film? Like, I think it would play differently if it was cel animation or live action. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, I totally agree. Yeah, I think stop motion is a wonderful vehicle and medium to tell stories that can be dark and challenging. And I've never seen animation as a genre. A lot of people would agree with me that really it's a medium and a great vehicle, as I said, to tell any story you like. And that's the beauty of being an animator is we are not restricted by how actors look. We can create whatever actor whatever look we want for our characters. We can create whatever world we want to put them in. So it's very liberating, and we have a lot of control and freedom over our worlds and our stories. We get to play God. We get to be megalomaniacs. And I could never do live action films. I just would feel restricted if I had to move into live action. And I think most animators would agree with me.
Can I ask what drew you to stop motion specifically? Like, it's a very famously tedious animation.
Yeah, look, I knew very early on, 28 years ago when I was at film school studying animation, that I saw that computer animation was evolving very quickly. And I knew that I didn't want to be a person who was stuck behind a computer screen all day. I love drawing. I love using my hands. I love making things. I love playing with clay. And so I thought, no, I think I want to go down the stop motion route. But back then, too, I was told that I was pursuing a dying art form and that stop motion would soon vanish because of CGI. But the complete opposite has happened. Stop motion is alive and well and is going through a bit of a golden era. Guillermo del Toro, Wes Anderson, they're all making stop motion films. And I think it's because audiences really appreciate that handcrafted look and that what they're looking at has been made by a human being, particularly now with AI that has arrived. There's a real appreciation of things that have been made by hand by humans.
So obviously, like, you have complete control over it in animation. Can I ask why you chose, I don't really want to say a drab color palette, but it's a lot of browns and grays, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, it's certainly deliberately drab, deliberately beige, and particularly when Grace is in Canberra, which we describe as beige, and it's a very boring, minimal sort of existence for poor old Grace. But also brown can also be very warm, so we also included a lot of autumnal colours, a lot of oranges and tans and yellows. There's no blue or green in the film. I banned those colours. I'm not a fan of blue. My mother used to dress me up in blue a lot as a child, so I have a strong reaction to blue. But also it sort of matches the psychological states of the characters, particularly Gilbert in Perth, where we used a lot of a very dark mission brown. And then Melbourne, we use a very blacky brown. And those cities sort of are like that in real life. So, we had a lot of fun coming up with the colour palette and using colour as a filmic device rather than just purely as an aesthetic.
Can I also ask why you, like, what drew you to snails as a concept at the core?
Well, yeah, look, originally the first draft of my screenplay was Memoir of a Ladybird, and it was Grace was like Ladybirds, but it all became a bit saccharine and cutesy and twee, and I thought there surely must be a better creature out there. So I went through the whole animal kingdom and I, you know, came across snails, and I thought, well, actually snails are a really lovely metaphor because, you know, you touch a snail's tentacles and they retract into their shell, and that's what Grace is doing her whole life. She's retracting from the world and pain and suffering. And also I love the spiral on a snail shell. That swirl is so symbolic of life going full circle, and that is very cyclic. So I thought that'd be a lovely visual motif to have throughout the film. And then I discovered that snails can't reverse. They can't go backwards. They can only go around in circles or move forwards. And I thought, well, that ties in very well to my favourite quote by the philosopher Soren Kierkegaard, that life can only be understood backwards, but we have to live it forwards. So I love that linkage there. And also, finally, I love Aesop's fables. I was brought up with Aesop's fables, and in particular, the tortoise and the hare, and that slow and steady wins the race. And Grace herself is very slow and steady and sluggish and passive and inactive. And I thought, well, yeah, that she sort of, you know, is a snail in so many ways.
So obviously this is a very Australian film. You're Australian. It takes place there. Are there any staples of Australian storytelling, do you think, that show up here? Like, it's a poorly worded question. I know in Canada we have a lot of staples of, like, body horror type stuff showing up unexpectedly. Is there anything that you can speak to for that?
Yeah, look, I think a lot of Australian films are quirky, and that's been a word that describes our cinema. And this film certainly is loaded with quirky you know, moments, quirky things to look at. It's also full of a lot of horrible Australiana. When I say horrible, I mean things like the Chico Roll, which is an Australian food that's very famous, quite delicious, but no one knows quite what's inside a Chico Roll. Then, of course, there's Vegemite, which people have a love-hate relationship with. I love Vegemite. Snails apparently love Vegemite. So, yeah, it's very important that I put in a lot of Australiana, a lot of have an Australian flavour going through the film. But I was also very mindful to make sure the film was universal and would be understood by people in countries such as Sweden and Iran and Argentina. You know, I tried to create a very universal story, and Grace herself is a very universal archetypal character. She's like an archetypal misfit or loner or underdog that people can relate to.
I'm redacting the next question because, guys, you know I'm new to this. I didn't really think the question through, but it does have a bit of a spoiler. So I'm going to rephrase the question now and then I'll play his answer. But the question was basically, there is a character in the film that has something to do with working in stop motion later on. Did that have any autobiographical or personal elements as a stop motion creator yourself?
Oh, for sure. Look, I love films that deal with the metaverse and of course, films like Christopher Nolan's Inception. So, you know, I wanted this film to have a film within a film within a film. And you know, I'm not the first to do that for sure. But we had a lot of fun playing around with that idea. And we had a beautiful moment where, you know, in Australia, it's very hard to find female stop motion animators. And so very lucky to have actually my cousin, Donna, was our only female animator. So I wanted a female animator animating a female animator animating a female animator. So we had this wonderful world within a world within a world, and took lots of photos that day. So yeah, it was fun to do all that.
That's incredible, actually. I really like that. I'll be honest, I don't know that I have any more questions. You've been really excellent to talk to. I really appreciate it.
Oh, no, thank you. Look, yeah, I'm just, as I said, I think I'm relieved more than anything that the film is being well received, because, you know, it really took a big toll on my mental health and my team. We're all exhausted, and we certainly didn't do it for the money. There wasn't much money. So it was 8 years of our lives, and so I'm glad it hasn't been a waste of time.
Yeah, no, it's an incredible piece. You should be very proud. And I really appreciate you taking the time to talk to me about it. Thank you so much.
My pleasure. Great questions too. Thank you.
Thanks.
That was really cool. Honestly, I don't really know what to say about that. It's an honor, obviously, that I got to talk to someone like that. But if hearing someone who worked on a piece and have so much pride over it and show so much intentionality and thought that went into every single moment of it doesn't sell you on wanting to watch a film, I don't know how else to do that. It is a really incredible experience. It's a beautiful film, Memoir of a Snail. I believe it does come out this week to theaters. I highly recommend it. It's an incredibly moving, emotional, hopeful, heartfelt, tear-jerking piece, and I hope you enjoy it as much as I did.
me a lesson. You corpses of cheer, at least those of you who still got an ear. I'll tell you a story, make a skeleton cry of our own jubilatiously lovely corpse bride.
Die, die, we all pass away. You might try high and you might try brave, but we all end up the remains of the day.
For miles around, when a mysterious stranger came into town. He was plenty good looking, but down on his cash. And our poor little baby, she fell hot and fast. When her daddy said no, she just couldn't cope. So our lovers came up with a plan to elope.
Die, 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 you might try high, and you might try play.
Except for a few things, or so I'm told, like the family jewels and a satchel of gold. Then next to the graveyard by the old oak tree, on a dark foggy night at 3:15, she was ready to go, but where was he? And then she waited,
and then
there in the shadows was it her man?
And then
her little heart beat so loud.
And then
baby, everything went black.
Now when she opened her eyes, she was dead as dust. Her jewels were missing and her heart was bust. So she made a vow lying under that tree that she'd wait for her true love to come set her free. Always waiting for someone to ask for her hand. When out of the blue comes this groovy young man who vows forever to be by her side. And that's the story of our
was, as I'm sure you can guess if you've seen the movie, both of those songs were from Corpse Bride. That song, actually, along with the entire score for the film, was written by composer icon Danny Elfman. He wrote that second song, the musical number, but he and Tim Burton couldn't find anyone to fit the tone for the song to sing it, so Danny ended up singing it himself. He's a musical person. We just heard him. He does sing very nicely, but he's a composer at heart, right? He said that this role left him with such a sore throat after every day of recording that he could barely talk the nights after. But anyways, let's move on to Corpse Bride. I'd be crazy to have no Tim Burton on this list. He's a weird guy. He said some weird things in the past, but his style is undeniable whether or not you like it or him. I am just realizing now that maybe it would be helpful if I define stop motion, and I am so sorry if you are sitting here completely lost at what I'm talking about. So, stop motion, I'm sure you know this, but in case you don't, just to be safe, stop motion is the act of taking a series of photos and running them fast enough to become video. The minimum frame rate for any video is 24 frames a second, which tricks our eyes into seeing still images as moving. That's what every film is, though these days we usually have a much higher frame rate. However, filmmakers use video cameras which take these photos fast enough and automatically. That's what your phone does when it takes a video, that's what any camera does when it takes a video, that's just what the concept of videos are. Stop motion animators, however, take every single one of those photos themselves. And in between each one, they just barely move their subject just a fraction of an inch. Take a photo, move the subject over and over and over and over. Stop motion can use whatever frame rate they want in a film, going as high as 30 or as low as 12. And there are a lot of different aspects that we can get into, like animating on twos and threes, but that's the basic premise of stop motion. It's taking a whole bunch of pictures that just have the very smallest amount of differences and smooshing them together so that they create a video. It's so funny because I have all of this stupid baseline film knowledge in my head, and I assume that everyone else does, and then I'm talking to someone and they don't, but I'll usually forget that. So if I'm ever going too fast for you, I do apologize. But anyway, of all the films we're talking about today, including Memoir of a Snail and Corpse Bride, they all used clay and wire figures. That's kind of the standard. Industry standard for stop motion has replaceable heads and mouths for every minute expression. So most characters in a feature-length film come away with hundreds of just barely different facial expressions. The puppets used for Corpse Bride, however, had clockwork heads. So each expression could barely adjust with just the turn of a key. I mean, it's kind of cool, but apparently it ended up making the process even more tedious. And honestly, stop motion, it looks so cool when it comes out, but just the act of doing it, it seems like a nightmare to me. Silly. Legitimately, any aughts kid with cool parents will know that you can never pass up the opportunity to play They Might Be Giants. Of course, this is from Coraline. They Might Be Giants actually wrote 10 songs for the movie when it was originally intended to be a musical. But then, you know, they decided to go in a darker tone with it, and they chose to cut almost all of them except for like that one and one other that was used in the credits. Coraline, which was written by the master Neil Gaiman, one of my all-time favorite authors. Like, legitimately, you know, I'm a comic book person, and his comics go so hard. I love The Sandman, but so do all of his novels. The Graveyard Book was one of my all-time favorite books as a kid, but let's get back to Coraline. Now, of course, stop motion is all miniature clay figures doing miniature clay figure things, but they all have to be in miniature sets, too. Coraline had over 130 sets built across 52 stages at the studios. They spanned over 180,000 square feet, which is roughly 4.2 acres. But let's keep moving on. We spent a lot of today's show on the interview, which was very time well spent. I'm sorry, that didn't make sense, but it was. But let's keep going on. Next up, I'm going to be outed a little bit as a hater. We're going to talk about two critically acclaimed, beloved movies in the last 3 years that I personally did not like at all. Next up, we're going to talk about Shaun the Sheep movie. You know, I do the Oscars death race, and I watch every Oscar-nominated movie every year. And I gotta say, it's not really Shaun the Sheep movie's fault that I didn't like it, because I came into watching it bitter. I saw this nominated and just decided this is not going to be a movie for me, and that's a bad way to watch a movie. That's not fair to the art. That's not fair to yourself, because you're depriving yourself of a good time. But anyway, we've talked about how tedious stop-motion animation is, and just as a testament to that, on this film, Shaun the Sheep movie, 20 animators worked on it, and they each produced 2 seconds of footage a day. This movie moved forward 40 seconds every production day.
Time of our lives, wonder of surprise, the open blue skies reflecting in our eyes, in a photograph. Captured as we laugh, like we always do. Clear country air, ever free from care. True friendship that we share, joy beyond compare. In a perfect place, see the sunny days coming into view. Cause every day feels like summer with you. Everything feels right starting anew. Purest paradise coming into view. Cause every day feels like summer with you. Everything feels right starting anew. Every day feels like summer with you. Ah, if we get lost on a gray and cloudy day.
My dear father loved to say, hop to the top of the day, the drops are easy to swallow. My dear father loved to say, mop your tears and mend your sorrows, to not drown your soul wishing for better tomorrows. You want to think bright, you want to think right. A star falling down, down, down doesn't break the night. You want to think right, whatever as you try to climb. For life has a funny way of going round and round. On a ride it goes, one day side to side, one day upside down, down, down. You can make it right, well worth a good fight. And if some days have downs and lows, open your arms to better tomorrows. A floating tune is in the air. The simple things you care to share. A trace of light, a flock of sparrows, anything high you dare to follow. Open your arms to better tomorrows. Tomorrows. You want to think bright. You want to think right. To let your heart sing, sing, sing on a summer night. You want to think bright. Whatever you do, when the strings go zing, 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 fly high with the band, just get up and swing. You can make it right, well worth a good fight. And if some days have downs and lows, open your arms to better tomorrows. Watercolors in May, painting a purple sky, a pen, a line, a river. Strokes on a mandolin, playing a gentle sigh. These are the simple things that matter. You want to think bright. You want to think right. And let your heart sing, sing, sing on a summer night. You want to think right, whatever you do. Teeny bells go ding, 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 laughing in the wind, kite on a string. For life has a funny way of going round and round. On a ride it goes, one day side to side, one day upside down, down, down. And you make it right, and your heart is bright. So let the world know how it goes. Open your arms to better. Open your arms to better.
I lose you. I mean, I've talked a lot about this show, how I have bad taste. We all know that I love bad movies, but I like to think that I don't often hate good ones. That was from Guillermo del Toro's Pinocchio. Now, don't get me wrong. I love Guillermo del Toro. I love Pan's Labyrinth. I love Nightmare Alley. I love his weird brand of fantasy, creepy, but not quite horror. He's a really cool dude. But why did we need another Pinocchio story? If you go on IMDb right now and just search Pinocchio, you will find 5 different retellings from the last 6 years. We don't need that. We literally don't need that. I'm so sorry. But whatever, Guillermo del Toro's Pinocchio, his visuals were beautiful, even if I didn't really care for the story. I can respect that. He took some risks. For real, this beat out Marcel the Shell with Shoes On and Turning Red for Best Animated Oscar. But oh well, I'm clearly not bitter about it at all. I'm in the bitter barn, I'm not gonna lie. And this film gave me an excuse to play Ewan McGregor's singing, which we just heard, so I have no good reason to hate it. Let's talk about some cool facts I found that were like super begrudging. I'm just a bad person ultimately. I couldn't find any concrete evidence, but I believe this is the longest stop-motion film at nearly 2 hours long. Alexandre Desplat, also the score, the artist, the composer behind this film, who we will talk about more later, he had every instrument used in the film to be made of wood. And even if I didn't like the piece, I love the intentionality behind something like that, because it's not something that as a listener you'll probably notice, but it added meaning and depth to the film, and I think it did change the context around which it was created. And I think something like that is really cool. I can get behind that. Even if I can't get behind another Pinocchio story. Like, why? Who likes this puppet that much? For real. I'm so sorry. I'm on a tangent. Let's keep going with Alexandre Desplat, who we've just talked about. These composers that I've mentioned today all have, like, massive history and success in other films. And you might recognize Desplat as being Wes Anderson's go-to for score. So let's hop over to Wes Anderson's brand of stop motion. I mean, I guess same with Pinocchio, I guess. We did just hear Adam Elliott in that interview talk about how both of these people are really keeping the medium relevant right now. And I respect that, so whatever. But let's move on to Wes Anderson. Let's move on to, objectively, decisively, my all-time favorite film. I know I say one of my favorite movies a lot, but this isn't one of my favorite movies. This is the favorite movie. This is Fantastic Mr. Fox. Wes Anderson had his actors recording things on location for this film. There are these great videos online of it. George Clooney, like, scarfing down a piece of toast, and then Wes Anderson holding a boom mic right next to his head. Like, he's doing jogging laps around a motorcycle and, like, panting out his lines. It's great. Highly recommend looking that up. This movie is just such a warm hug to me right now. I know that is a warm hug to most other viewers as well. So let's just enjoy some niceness to cleanse ourselves from the Pinocchio. I understand if you don't like me anymore. That's a reasonable response, but I just have beef.
Thank you. golden and brilliant without illumination. Your mouth a constellation, the stars are in your eyes. I'll take a spaceship and try and go and find you. I won't hurt you, I won't hurt you, I won't hurt you. Rainbow, how good it is to know your lightning. Strike me with your lightning, bring me down and bury me with ashes. I won't hurt you, I won't hurt you, I won't hurt you.
Just sneaking it in at this point, but that was from another Wes Anderson stop-motion film, Isle of Dogs. Now, this is one of his more recent ones, and what I love about this film is how much it draws from Akira Kurosawa, who is one of the greatest filmmakers of all time. He is a classic Japanese filmmaker. A few weeks ago, we did do an episode all about his scores and all of his classic music. I really love listening to the soundtrack of this film specifically, Isle of Dogs, because so many of the score pieces that Wes Anderson used and created in this are score pieces that, you know, he didn't create. He borrowed from Kurosawa, he had modern symphonies put them together, and it's just these, like, beautiful 50s, 60s, like old Hollywood beats that you can feel. And it's really interesting how musical tendencies like that crossed, you know, the ocean. Like, there are pieces in there that just sound like an old school horror movie or something, like something grand and sweeping that you would have seen come out of Hollywood or somewhere more Western. And they crossed the borders there, and now they're crossing generations and time of filmmakers. And I think there's something really beautiful about that. I want to hit another one really quickly before we end off today, but the next one I want to do is more of an adult stop-motion film. I'm not saying the other ones are for kids that we talked about. Some of them are. Some of them are for a more mature audience, but this one is, like, capital A adult. And I don't mean that in that is, like, sexy times. I mean it in that, like, kids probably aren't interested in this film, but it is Anomalisa. Now, I remember the first time I watched this. I was younger. I was probably in middle school. And it stuck with me in this guttural way. So let me tell you a little bit about the film. It is a film that only has three people in its cast. And it has many, many, many more characters than three. But there's a really interesting creative reason for this, so I want to put that out here. So it is about this character, Michael Stone. He is an author, but he is completely unable to interact deeply with anyone in his life. Every single other character he meets that is not him has the same face, the same voice, and they might, you know, be doing different things. They might have different clothes on. They might have different levels of importance, but they all just look completely the same to him. And I think that's a really unique way to capitalize on the freedoms that animated mediums give you, because it would just look weird if you did that and, like, a woman's body had a man's face on it the whole time. But something like stop motion gives you a lot more of a creative license. Anyway, he's on this business trip and everyone's just looking the same. And he's going through, like, the mundaneness of this life that he's kind of built for himself just because, you know, he's not meeting anyone halfway. And eventually he meets this woman that looks different, sounds different, is different, and it's all about how his life with this completely new stranger kind of feels like a cure for this negative world that he's trapped himself in. I'd honestly say there are elements of Lost in Translation, you know, Sofia Coppola's bit with Scarlett Johansson and Bill Murray, just in that sense of looking for connection when you feel isolated from everyone else around you. But this has a more somber tone, which again is very interesting for an animated piece of work. We often assume or associate animation with something more childlike and something more positive and happy and easy. We turn in for today, and that last film is called My Life as a Zucchini. Now, it's a ridiculous name, and again, I'd say this sits somewhere in, like, the Memoir of a Snail level of film. Like, it's not an adult film in the sense that it's just, like, boring to kids, but it's also kind of dealing with bigger concepts than we normally associate with movies strictly for children, right? So this is a film about a young boy whose nickname is Zucchini. That's just what he likes to be called. And then his mom passes away when he's about 9. And it's all about his transition into the foster care system and how through the people there and the other orphans and everyone around him, he kind of learns the meaning of love and trust and support with one another. So it is like a positive, heartwarming story. It's just like, I don't know how much a 5-year-old is going to retain all of that, but maybe they will. Maybe there are some like really genius 5-year-olds out there. Now, I did find some really interesting stats about this movie. For instance, 50 craftspeople created 60 sets and 54 puppets who all had 3 different types of outfits, which also each needed to be made individually. I mean, I hope your takeaway for this episode, if anything, is that stop motion is an incredible labor. This film, My Life as a Zucchini, took 2 years to shoot. This is a slow, tedious art form, but what you get out of it is something that you cannot accomplish in any other medium, and there are no substitutes for the way that these movies look and the texture that you can feel just from looking at a screen. That's an incredible accomplishment. Everyone who I've mentioned today, even the films that I haven't loved, which will remain nameless because I'm super subtle about it, even those people, like, so much effort has gone into creating this art, and I know that any form of filmmaking is a backbreaking struggle, labor of love, and it is so hard to accomplish. But something like this, this level of attention to detail and time and effort and struggle, it's an incredible accomplishment. And I have the utmost respect for anyone who can do stop motion effectively and beautifully like all of these people have. Before I play you a song from My Life as a Zucchini, I do want to plug next week's show. We actually have something really exciting going on here next week, and I know I say that every week, but next week we are participating in an event here on CFMU. It is us, and it is the other film, TV, movie-based show here called Animation in Motion. That radio show airs Tuesdays at noon to 1 and is all about animated and visual mediums. And between them and us, we are hosting something called Roots on Radio, which is all about looking at local Ontario artists and how their practices function in the realm of environmentalism and sustainability, and how they are interacting with the planet in their artistic practices. I've already done some of the interviews that we are going to be playing on next week's show, and I am so excited to share them with you. We're talking to a playwright from Toronto, a stage and a theater actor from Guelph, the local creator and curator of the Hamilton Film Festival. Like, we have so many cool people coming in to share with us how their art interacts with the environment and sustainability, and it's going to be a really awesome time. So please tune in next week, Thursdays at 1, right here on 93.3 CFMU-FM. CinemaScope is doing it, and again, next week, Tuesdays at noon, Animation in Motion is doing it. It's going to be a really cool time. If you are interested in art in any capacity, it is well worth listening to. I know that our show, at least, is going to be talking about how to work sustainably and mindfully of the environment, and that is such an important topic right now. So I am so excited to see you next week. I have been your host, Scarlett Sapia, right here on 93.3. This is CinemaScope, and thank you so much for listening today.
Faudrait voir, faut qu'on y goûte des méandres au creux des reins. Tout ira bien. Le vent l'emportera. Ton message à la grande ours, la trajectoire de la course, l'instantané de velours, même s'il sert à. Le vent l'emportera, tout disparaîtra, le vent nous portera. Caresser la mitraille, cette plaie qui me tiraille, le palais des autres jours.
PSA from CFMU. film opening, Sultans of String, Walking Through Fire, is on November 17th at 7 p.m. at the Westdale Theater. This special film brings the magic of collaboration to the screen with award-winning First Nations, Métis, and Inuit artists from across Turtle Island, joined by Billboard charting and six-time CFMA winners Sultans of String. The film will be followed by a Q&A panel with artists from the film, Shannon Thunderbird, and Sultans of String